We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Oh, man. He said he's the fastest in NFL history. Oh, man. That shit does.
Welcome to Get Your Popcorn Ready Podcast. This is your host, Hatch, with my boy.
Yep, yep. This is T.O. in the building. And we have a guest, a great guest, and a fast guest in the building.
We have the biggest small guy in the world, or the smallest guy in the world.
Darryl Green of the former Washington Redskins.
Yes. Now the Washington football team.
Yeah.
No, it's a football club now.
Is it club or team? I think it's Washington football team. I think you said it right.
Yeah, okay, there it is. Darryl was played 20 years in the NFL as a corner, right? Ended up going to the NFL Hall of Fame, of course. Has 54 career interceptions, seven-time Pro Bowler, four-time All-Pro. Again, there was nothing that dude couldn't do. And it's not – he was playing when they didn't have big receivers at the time. They didn't have a bunch of 6'3", 6'4 receivers at that time. But anybody else out there, he was definitely locking them down. So looking forward to having Darryl Green on the show on Get Your Popcorn Ready Podcast. And don't forget to subscribe on the Himalaya app where you ever get your podcast.
And no doubt, to see the video version of this, you obviously get to listen to us every week. But to listen to the and see the video version of this – go to my YouTube channel. Go to youtube.com/Terrell Owens.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, 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 yes. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Get Your Popcorn Ready Podcast. It's your host, Hatch, with my boy T.O. is also in the building. What up, T?
What's up, man? Hey, Darryl Green.
Let's go, man. In the building too. The little guy.
Hey, we got a guy here, man. That's already been talking noise pre-show, talking about there would be no Jerry, no T.O., no Randy Moss if he had hands.
Hey, man, you ain't got no hands.
I know you got hands like feet, man.
Hey, my wife used to say, honey, you can't catch. I'm like, come on now. You gonna say it too?
No, hey.
The true story is when I decided to play football in the summer going to the 11th grade. And I was like, man, I can be a running back. Man, they gonna kill you. You don't weigh but a buck. They're like, man, I could be a wide receiver. Man, I can't catch. And this true story. It's true story. And that's how I decided to try to play corner. But I wasn't really a big catcher.
That brings me this question. How many interceptions did you finish with?
I finished with, if 54. You count playoffs, 54 and 60 because I caught six playoffs. But I won't even exaggerate if I drop 30.
Ooh.
My wife said I couldn't catch. Come on, man.
Well, then you know if your wife said you can't catch.
You get in the car going home from the game, you're like, baby, you can't catch.
Hey, but you made the most important catch of all. You caught her.
There it is.
You
know what I mean?
Yeah. I've been married 35 years.
That's awesome. Especially just in general, just with the divorce rate and marriage and people getting married at an early age.
And in sports.
Right. The statistic on sports. Then I came from a broken home, alcoholic, all that we went through. I was telling them, I lived in the same projects that George Floyd lived in. And so
in Houston, Texas. Yep.
Yeah, and so all of that, and you're right. I've been faithfully married 35 years, man. Just so, I mean, that's my pride and joy, you know, what I've done to overcome a generation, a two generations, at least that I know, because my father didn't know his dad. So minimally two generations of you know, going the wrong way, and to be able to accomplish that, you know, appreciate the job I had. I did work on that, and I did my job. But man, what I got now, I get to have this till I die. I can't play football till I die, but I get to have my wife and my family until I die. So I'm grateful.
That's awesome.
That's on the real. Absolutely.
Well, yeah, we have 20-year NFL vet, Hall of Famer, right? You have Super Bowl champion, 7-time Pro Bowler, 4-time first-team All-Pro. Darryl Green is on the show with us today at Get Your Popcorn Ready. And we are going to get into a little bit of his lifestyle, because, again, what he was just saying, right, faithfully married for 35 years, and everybody's always putting stigmas and all this, you know, perspectives on athletes and entertainers, and they can't be faithful, and they, you know, they're always out hanging out, and they got all the bling and the gold and platinum and whatever that is. But Darryl kind of did it a different way. You know, like I said, Darryl has been one of my mentors, you know, for the last 10 or so years as well. It's just trying to become a, you know, a better adult in society. And I just want you to kind of go back to, like I said, how it all started, you know, because again, you came from humble beginnings. Like you said, you're from Houston, Texas, and kind of take us through that journey of you really not even playing football or not being a football guy, which a lot of people don't understand neither. And like I said, T says that a lot. It's like he didn't grow up, you know, saying I'm going to the NFL Hall of Fame. And your kind of background was like kind of the same way.
Yeah. So, you know, again, you got to look at the time too, because I'm 60 years old. So I was born in 1960. So 60 to 70, you got three TV stations. The Houston Oilers, I think, came around probably in 1960. So, you know, my hometown in the era wasn't that, like, you know, come on, man. There were no podcasts back then. Right.
No.
So some of it was exposure, and that's huge too when you're talking with youth. Exposure is key. You know, I was a furniture truck driver, as I told you. I was leaving the projects, going to a big 15,000 square foot home where you know, I got to hit a gate to get in. And so I'm going back to the projects, but I'm going to that. I'm going where there's in Texas, there's a house in the back of the house where Hispanics live that take care of the house. That's what happened, you know, as a child in Houston. So the perspective was totally not, man, I'm gonna be a pro football player. And I couldn't spell pro football player. I didn't know any of it. I didn't see it. There wasn't no Madden games and all that stuff. So the perspective is a part of it, and the era was part of it. But also, I was small, and I was scared, truth be told. And then I eventually ended up playing as a junior. That summer, getting ready to go in my junior year, I decided I wanted to try to play football.
So you hadn't played football before that? You didn't play football seventh, eighth, ninth year, nothing like that?
I played 1 year as a seventh grader. Okay. For the elementary school.
Right, but that's really not playing football. You just out there. You don't really know much of nothing. You're just out there running around.
I don't really call that really football. I mean, that was just, you know, I played a lot of in the streets, touch on the street, tackle on the grass. Right. But to say, man, I want to try, I had to go through a long process of, you know, but again, remember, it was what they called back then, it was called extracurricular activities.
Yeah.
So, hey man, what do you do extracurricular? Well, I play in the band. I do this, I do that, I cut yards. So it wasn't to try to play and make the pros or the college. And then they put me on JV. I would loved it. I played 10 games. We won all 10 games. I was happy. I wasn't
so as
like,
a junior, you played JV.
JV, first time we won 10 games.
That's funny.
Now, we'll say that kicked something in gear, because now I kind of got an itch. Man, can I make varsity? Not only can I make varsity, how can I start? Because the 10th graders were on varsity. I'm playing JV corner. It's a 10th grader on varsity. You know they're planning for him to be some, an 11th grader on varsity, like me on 11th grade. So that was an accomplishment, in my opinion. I made the starting team, and then boom, I get no scholarship. I walked on at an AIA school, and it was fun. I walked on. I played a little bit that semester, but I dropped out.
Texas A&I, right?
And they call it Texas A&M Kingsville now, but I did get to play that first year, but I dropped out right after the last game. My boy got killed in a car wreck. I was supposed to be in the same car with him. His name was Cornell Green. And my best friend, Clem Greenwood, we were all best friends when my parents got divorced. I got over there and I moved in with them. And so I left and went home, drove a furniture truck, and I went to community college. And a year and a half later, I came back to college. And 3 years later, I was a first round draft pick. So my first year in both situations was really, really bad. Really, really
so
bad.
So, man, so you, you started out, man, you know, you're on your football journey kind of with a heavy heart, you know, and then just to think about the idea of what you just mentioned, you said, man, you were supposed to be in the car with somebody that died. And now,
man, I was cussing. I don't even cuss. And I was cussing. I was mad because I was homesick. I was always a homesick kid. It was a 5-hour drive. And I was begging, man, please, please. And man, when they left me in that Monday, somebody said, man, y'all heard about that car wreck? Oh man, what car wreck? Because we had just all kind of got to school. We didn't know, everybody didn't know each other. And boom, that was an explosion. That just blew my life. And I went home for that year and a half and just kind of licked my wounds. And then I went back. But I had no plan to the point. I wasn't planning to go be no pro football player. I was just going to school, trying out extracurricular.
I like the way that you explain that because of me and Hatch, we've gone back and forth and I've kind of explained it that way too. I was like, man, I never really thought I was going to play football, but on the collegiate level. And I've always said that, you know, it never really was a dream. It never really was an aspiration, but it's like you, like when you don't have, again, any dreams as a kid or you don't have a father figure, a brother or any male figure, because you hear all the success stories where, you know, you got dads putting balls in their kids' hands at an early age, things of that nature. So you almost kind of see, you're almost seeing that they're preparing them, you know, for just the idea of possibly playing, you know, at any type of level. So I like the way that you explain it. Like, we just grew up, we were just being kids, just playing
sports.
That's
it. That's exactly.
You know what I mean? And so that's how I try to explain the Hatches. Like, well, he's like, no, you had to have had some type of drive, this, that's another. But it's just like, it was just that way. I didn't really think anything beyond being just an adolescent or a teenager, just playing sports. And then things just kind of just unfold for you.
But I'll add this to T, is this. That don't mean that when we was out there with our boy Pookie and Johnny and them, that we weren't trying to kick their butt.
Right.
don't get that. Far twisted.
Right.
We were kicking butt. Right. You know, we were just having fun, but it wasn't that important to us. We just, I kick your butt over here, then I'm gonna go over here and cut yards. I'm gonna go ride my bike, you know, go over here and talk to this girl. We wasn't gone. Football. We lived life. I think I always said I was the most kid in the world. I just like being a kid. The stuff that come with being a kid.
Is that the reason that you never grew past 5'8"?
And 3/4. You can call me 5'8", but don't kill me 3/4.
No, I'll give you that 3/4. Give you that 3/4,
y'all. Don't say 5'8", dog. Because you got $75 or 75 cents. You just walk away from your change.
Right now, I'll give you that 75. Yeah, hold on, partner. Oh, Let me get that.
Right.
Okay. Okay.
But
so this,
I think in reality, T, we were probably more prepared. Well, we were, because look where we went. We were probably more free-minded in our mind. We were freer. We had probably way more fun than everybody else. We probably just, I mean, really, I think we had more. Dude, if you didn't think T had fun in football, you're losing your mind.
Absolutely.
We had more fun than everybody else because we wasn't locked up.
Mentally, you wasn't locked up.
We wasn't. We were free. We out here, Matt. I used to tell Jared all the time, my son, dude, have fun. It was always fun to me. I'm kicking his butt, but I'm having fun, and I ain't cussing him and mad at him. I'm just having fun. And I tell you, I wish more kids could get our experience. Could have our experience.
And I think being that you touched on it, I think that's what we've experienced really with a lot of kids in America, especially with and with the emergence of technology too, which has taken a lot of kids from the outdoors. When we grew up, like I said, I didn't grow up in the 60s and 70s, but
But the idea of just us being outside in the yard playing with your friends, that was entertainment for us.
It wasn't
anything for us to really segue to as far as being on the computer, phones, things of that nature. Outdoors was our way of entertainment and just being
and you couldn't really get there without somebody else.
Right.
You have hopscotch, 1, 2, 3 red light, dodgeball,
four square.
Nobody was by themselves.
No, right. There was always a group. Yeah.
You could be your video in your room all day.
By yourself.
You had to go and knock on door. Hey, T, come on out, man.
Right.
Come on
right.
out, Hatch. We going right, down the right. street. And so we had to be together to do what we were going to do versus some kid in the back room.
Yeah, right. And so again, I just became part of Project Play, which is really, really touching on the idea of really trying to get parents and these kids to be more active, be outdoors. Because you think about, kids, just obesity in our country, probably at an all-time high, and a lot of it is due to, starting with kids, being consumed with computers, and it's okay to educate yourself and technology. Where we are now, you have to access, technology and be available to really educate yourself. But you can't spend almost 23 hours a day on the computer, playing video games, things of that nature. I appreciate you really kind of touching on that, because I think that's where we as parents, Hatch is not a parent yet, but he'll soon get there. That's what we have to do. We have to teach our kids to really, find other ways to entertain ourselves and go out and be active and really explore, because you never know what you can become. Just like yourself, Daryl, myself, Hatch, just playing a number of sports and not really as parents and uncles and granddads and dads, you don't pigeonhole your kids into playing one sport. You got to allow them to be kids. That's what we did. We were kids. We were able to play a number of sports and really just go from one sport to another, because you never know how good or how great you can become, just by exploring.
I tried out for baseball in those projects that I was telling you I lived in. When we first moved out there, I think I was 10. I got cut. I didn't make the team. Mm-hmm. And when he called everybody up and said, okay, kid, and back then, hey, you go home. I didn't kick or spit. I just ran across the street and played with my other friends.
Right.
Okay,
right.
I didn't make the team. And right. then I ran track a little bit, some track. I played football, but back then, like I'm saying, mama ain't over there trying to talk this man. No, you didn't cut my son. Like, dude, he couldn't play.
He can't play. Period.
Right. Guess what? I couldn't catch the baseball either.
Right.
So we ain't
but
shot.
This is a true story. That's true. I've always been mad because when I got out there, we was on the outfield catching. I never got the bat or run. That might be on him. I didn't bat or run. I might could have bat. I don't know. But I got cut. He called us up. All I had done was try to catch, and it didn't work out. So this catching thing was a trip, man. I was catching the ball.
Let me ask you this. So, right, you're going into now you're going to be a first-round pick, to the Washington Redskins. So they had to do pro days, right? So some teams had to come down there and work you out. Did anybody throw the ball at you, or did you do all DB stuff without a ball?
You know, it's interesting you saying that. I'm sure they did, but all I remember is the speed, the footwork and the speed and all that stuff. I don't remember. Now, I ran punts back. I could catch punts.
Yeah. It's up there for a long time, yeah.
Yeah, and wide receiver, the ball, the ball is coming quick, I guess I couldn't readjust, but a punt, I was pretty good at punt returning.
Yeah, true.
But which you would think I could have caught a dumb fly ball, too. Maybe I was sitting in the
right.
head
or something. Hey, move that glove out the way. you ran scared. That's why you
were
fat.
I probably was scared, man. I ain't gonna lie, I was.
When's the first time you found out you were fast, like elite fast? Because as everybody knows, right, you were the 4.2 guy, one of the fastest guys in the NFL ever to play. In the NFL, the 4.2 clocked numerous times at a 4.2. But when did you find out you were fast?
Well, hold up. Let's be clear. I'm the fastest guy in history, Period. Just go with that. Lead that.
Lead
that.
I don't know.
Lead that, man. Theo. Hey, look, man. Lead that alone.
So you think Primetime might not have something to say about this?
Uh-oh.
You said, do I think?
I'm not thinking anything.
I've told you what I said.
I told you what I said.
Read
now.
My lips.
I said what I said.
Read
wow.
My lips.
Did you ever clock a 4-1 something? I'm sorry. I forgot who I was talking to. My bad.
Come on, man. Let's move on to another segment.
So just so we're clear out there, ladies and gentlemen, Daryl Green did clock a 4-1-8, 4-1-9 numerous times.
8-9? What are you talking about? You don't know what you're saying.
Is it a 4-1-1?
Well, let it be clear then. Clarify.
You wasn't winning no 4-1-1. So, I mean,
okay, here's the deal. What I don't like to do, because I'm 60 and I can't prove it anyway, is done. Let's just move on. It is what it is.
What have you – I get it. What have you been – what's the fastest that you've been clocked?
Here's the thing, Theo. Well, see, you guys are big time and everything.
No,
so I went to a small school.
Small schools.
So did I. UT Chattanooga.
UT Langston. Chattanooga.
Langston in the building. Yeah. We all small schools.
So here's the thing. When you even in track, you go out there and you run a 9-8 or whatever, and they say, well, hey, we don't have the wind machine.
Right,
and
right. Unofficial.
Oh, man, forget all that. You know, right. You go and you run a 4-1-0 or whatever. You know. Sometimes it's like people don't want to believe it. It's like when I ran a 40-yard dash for the pros in my freshman year. They came to the school, and it was like for fun. They wanted me to entertain these scouts. And I ran as a freshman, you know, like a 4-3-1 or something, and something crazy in 1978. And they were like, wow, run it again. Well, first of all, I didn't even know what it meant.
Yeah, you don't know what you were doing. Yeah,
you're just running.
I'm just running. And I can tell you right now, I never ran as fast as I could run. I just never ran as fast as I could run. You saw the fastest man. I beat Olympians from behind. You got a gold medal. You got a gold medal, and I caught you from behind. So I'm not bragging, but I was just uniquely gifted. I don't have to fight for
right.
it. There was something in God that I just from little. We used to run around the house like motorcycles, you know. And then the right hand corner was muddy. You want to get, you know, we were a rock. You know how they ride the motorcycles.
We're on feet,
and it's three of my brothers with me. And you got to get that first corner, you know, or get pushed down. So, man, we ran. All we did is run. Running was like, and they said, you know, my first opening game, I case Dawson. I was like, what's the excitement about? Running.
But run. I get out. This is all good for the story and fluff and stuff, but you're still not answering my question. What is the fastest that you run? That's all I need to know.
That you heard, come out of somebody else.
Right, exactly. What do you Daryl think? Green, what you do you remember?
You know what? It would probably go on record at like a 4-1-1 or something. But I ran faster than that. But just for y'all, I'll just
okay. We go. 4-1-1. You didn't hear what he said though. He said I ran a 4-1-1. But I probably ran faster than that.
I heard what he said.
Because remember.
So that's almost equivalent to like what Usain Bolt. It's like Usain Bolt can really run, but it doesn't really look like he's running. You know what I mean? So there's no telling what he could run like if he really ran.
Some people, and I'm sober when I say this. Some people they're just something that they just got. God gave it to them. I can't really. Yeah. I don't really like beating my chest over because I really got
it. Man, let me tell you something. You ain't beating your chest on the Get Your Popcorn Ready podcast. If you think it, we going to say it.
Already.
If it's real and truth, we going to report it.
Yeah.
So again, it's confidence. Like I said, there's no arrogance about what you're saying.
Yeah.
We're not trying to promote that. I asked you a question. And again, it's up for people's again, they have to believe it. You know what I mean? It's up to them whether you want to believe it or not.
That's exactly right. And for me, they could go online and say he did. it ain't gonna stop me from getting up and go eat a sandwich. Exactly. You know what I'm saying? Exactly. My life is still gonna go forward.
Yeah. Right. No doubt.
They don't. That's what I'm saying. We just talking. So hey, whatever. But now I will say this, and this ain't me talking. And this is this is the network that you said Deion worked for. What network did he work for?
The NFL Network.
Now Google NFL Network.
Barstool. So if you Google Daryl Green number one, NFL Network said, I'm the fastest player in NFL history, with Bob Hayes being number two. I didn't say it.
Right.
And he worked for that company and they didn't say it him. So I'm not trying to create an issue, but hey, it is what it is, baby.
Right.
It is what it is. But I will say this. I don't think in this 5'8", 3/4 body and 173 when I got drafted, that if I didn't have that superior speed, I probably couldn't have been a 20-year NFL player. Absolutely. And the other thing is, I've worked on every day of my life, speed and footwork. Every day. Because I knew, and that's what kids, if you want to teach kids something, look, man, if you got Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, how many times do you think he worked on that hook shot?
Thousands upon thousands.
Ray Allen, how many times do you think he worked on that shot that he hit against San Antonio?
I will say this.
I did work on being fast and footwork every day, sometimes twice a day, most of the time twice a day. So kids, regardless, don't worry about what I ran. I'm done. But if you want to be great, then run that route 10,000 times. Run that route all the time. And probably, had I worked on catching, I probably would have been a better catcher, but I didn't work on catching.
So you basically saying what you did was really you really took advantage of your speed, and you knew that that was going to, like I said, you knew that you didn't really have the best hands, but just the fact that you were fast, that basically kind of overcompensated for your lack of hands.
Yeah. My footwork and my speed, I'm going to be there.
Like
I might
said,
catch one every once in a while, but I'm going to at least knock it down if I can.
Like T said, your feet was your hands.
You know what? Hey, look here. I'm feeling that. I'm feeling that.
You got it.
My feet was my hand.
Absolutely.
Man, I'm about to run with that.
Good segue into this. Let's do it. Hatch, I don't know what it's like out there in LA, but here in Florida.
It's kind of hot. We got to hydrate, T.
Oh, I know. But I mean, out here in Florida, I mean, it's not really hot. We're dealing with a lot of hurricanes. We have a lot of wind. The seasons are changing. It's getting cooler. So I have to make adjustments, just like we all have to make adjustments as the seasons change. So if you're bundling up with more layers of clothes, or depending, you know, what your temperature, what temperature you like. Some people like it hot. Some people like it cold. Mm-hmm. Myself, I like it warm.
Yeah,
I like it for hot. Me. Yeah. So with this cooler weather, it makes it easier to miss signs of dehydration, like overheating or perspiration, which means it's even more important to keep your body hydrated, properly hydrated at that. So now that, like I said, I have a race coming up in a few weeks. So I'm looking to try to stay hydrated. I'm on the track. And then with this cool weather, obviously you're trying to generate some heat. You're trying to keep warm, trying to stay lathered. But again, as you're running, you're sweating. You don't feel like you're sweating or what have you. You're losing, you're perspiring, and you need to hydrate. So Liquid IV is one of those products that I like to use. It's the best-selling hydration multiplier now that has three new flavors, two of the three I like. I'm going to mention three, but two of them I really like. So you have guava, watermelon, and apple pie. Apple pie, I don't know about that one so much, but the guava and the watermelon, hey, I love it. And then as you think about it too, we're dealing with COVID. Flu season often lines up with our holiday plans, but Liquid IV can help you support your immune system with increased hydration and essential vitamins. It's perfect for staying hydrated on holiday flights or long road trips. It can even help with hangovers after those extra holiday drinks. I know a lot of you guys are getting gearing up. You got Thanksgiving coming up, followed right by the Christmas holidays. So definitely, this is definitely something that a lot of us could use.
So go ahead and slide some of that liquid IV into your eggnog, and you will not be disappointed.
Liquid IV. I don't know if that's going to taste good, but okay.
But it's going to feel good. Liquid IV is available nationwide at Walmart and beverages in the beverage section. Or you can get 25% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code popcorn at checkout. That's 25% off anything you order when you use promo code popcorn at liquidiv.com. Get better hydration today at liquidiv.com, promo code popcorn.
And also, too, I want to add that Liquid IV contains 5 essential vitamins, more vitamin C than an orange, and as much potassium as a banana. Healthier than sugary sports drinks. I know all of us get consumed with a lot of these products that are, you know, being introduced. This Liquid IV has no artificial flavors or preservatives and less sugar than an apple. Made with clean ingredients, non-GMO, vegan, free of gluten, dairy, and soy. So again, as Hash just said, Liquid IV is available nationwide at Walmart in the beverage section, or you can get 25% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use promo code popcorn at checkout. That's 25% off anything you order when you use promo code popcorn at liquidiv.com. Get better hydration today at liquidiv.com, promo code popcorn.
Yes, sir. I got my push-ups and sit-ups in this morning. T, I'm feeling real good. You know, I'm about right 208, 209 right now.
Really, your hoodie's looking real flabby.
You know what I'm saying?
I don't know if you've really been doing push-ups.
Maybe
it's it looked like you might be doing something. You've been doing some traps or something.
I haven't been doing traps. I'm eating right. You know, I got my Orgain powder getting into my body. You know, I've been on it a couple weeks. And thanks to Orgain, their sport plant-based powders help me get the most out of my workouts, and I feel absolutely at my best right now. The Orgain Sport Protein Powder is a unique blend of organic ingredients that help build strength and optimize both performance and recovery. I mix it into a smoothie, probably some of my kale, banana, oranges, pineapple smoothie type deal, and it's ready to go. If I need that extra spark to start my workout and want to stay sharp throughout the day, then I reach for the Sport Energy Powder, right? It's packed with electrolytes and adaptogens for optimal performance no matter what I'm doing.
Is that what you've been taking for the show? Because you seem like you got a lot of energy, man.
Yes, I have. Yes, I have. You know what I'm saying?
I see you bringing a lot of energy, a lot of zest to the show the last couple of episodes. I see it must be working.
You know what? It's time to turn up with Orgain Sport Recovery Powder, right? Maximizes restoration, replenishes tired muscles with a unique blend of plant-based organic ingredients, including adaptogenic mushrooms to help reduce inflammation. Thanks to Orgain, I finally found the best clean products to help keep me healthy and support my performance. And right now, you can save up to 20% off your first order. Plus, when you subscribe, you can also save more. Go to tryorgain.com/popcorn. That's tryorgain.com/popcorn for 20% off your first order, plus extra savings when you subscribe. tryorgain.com/popcorn.
So, man, you know, I know it's we've been quarantined, you know what I mean? I don't know how your dating life is. I know mine has been somewhat non-existent, but
that's sad to hear, buddy.
hey, just how it is, man. Quarantine has made people social distance themselves more than they've wanted to social distance.
True.
But with all the social distancing, a lot of people have been longing for some touch. You get what I'm saying? You know, they've been longing for some touch. You know, if you ain't really touched nothing and, you know, you ain't really seen nothing in a while, you know what I mean? You get that, you know, that softness, that female softness, or rubbing up on that leg, then that other leg, you know, that other leg starting to grow. So, you know, if you want to boost your confidence, you know, we have an item for you to help boost your confidence. So if you like sex, you'll love BlueChew.com. BlueChew.com offers men a performance enhancement for the bedroom. BlueChew.com, yeah, the chewables from BlueChew can be taken on a full or an empty stomach. Mm-hmm. So men, fellas out there, it only takes a few minutes to connect. BlueChew.com affiliated physician. And if you qualify, you get prescribed online quickly. So I know a lot of you guys out here, like I said, we've been social distancing. And if you want that extra boost of confidence, hey, we got some for you. These blue chewables, I think they might be right for you.
It's nice, especially you don't have to sit around and wait all day for it to kick in. They work a lot faster, I think within only a few minutes, right? There's no in-person doctor visits. You know, those awkward conversations with the doctor, like, hey, my man, you know, can you subscribe? That whole thing is out the door, right? Waiting in line at the pharmacy. So when you do see something cute at the pharmacy, you're like, she's like, I hope he ain't here for them. Like, you ain't got to worry about all that. You know what I'm saying? You could just be confident and do this at home because it shipped directly to your door in discreet packaging. Same thing. What if the mail lady is a cute mail lady? She want to drop off your package and she's like, here, I guess you need these. You ain't got that to worry about because it comes in discreet packaging. The chewables from BlueChew.com and made right here in the U.S. of A. BlueChew gives you confidence in bed every time. You and your partner will love it. Trust me. Chew it and do it.
And here's a great deal for you guys. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first order free when you use promo code GPR. Just pay $5 shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code GPR.
That's right. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first order free and use promo code GPR. Just pay $5 in shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code GPR.
Hey, and that's it, guys. Hey, if you want to last longer, if you want to go more rounds, if you want to be a rock star to whomever it is that you're trying to be a rock star, hey, the chewables, BlueChew.com, makes something that's already good. Sex, they making it better.
BlueChew.com if you want to get your Rocky Balboa on. We're here with Hall of Famer Darryl Green, 7-time Pro Bowler from then the Washington Redskins, now the Washington Football Club. So we know that you do your, you know, you're still in Washington, still out there living the life. And again, that 20 years living in that city, playing for that team, you know, what's some of the highlights during that career? Because again, you were in politics is big right now with the presidency and all that stuff going on, the election and all of that. But like when you were there for those 20 years, how were you embedded in the government, if at all?
Not really. Well, the impressive thing for me coming from Texas was in Texas, the anchor, the news anchor worked on Saturday. When I came here, the news anchor was Black and he worked on Monday through Friday. The mayor was African-American. You know, different. I came in 1983 when I was impressed by the upward boundness of my community, and I appreciated that. I appreciated that a lot, that people could be more than what I experienced them being dressed in these colors. And so I was impressed by that. I was more impressed with the city, with the ability for access, the ability to be upward bound, the academics of and the thinking of the people here. They wasn't from where I was from. People believe, and we just talked about it. You know, talked about exposure. We talked about exposure. Exposure, if you wanted to be an anchor at TV, you're going to probably work weekends. You weren't going to be the anchor on Monday as an African-American. You know, Alexis Aguero, he was down in Texas. I remember the name. The Hispanic guy got to be the anchor on the weekend, and I got here, and Jim Vance was the anchor on Channel 4 on Monday, and Tuesday, and Wednesday, and Thursday, and Friday. Yeah. And Paul Barry, and many others were able to do that. And Marion Barry, like him or not, he was the mid-city, and the police chief. And so I was, that impressed me. That impressed me a lot. In terms of the football, it was just, hey, you're going to try to make this team and provide for your family. It was always a job to me. So that wasn't the big deal to me. I was more wild out and bushy tailed, as you know, just wow, because I came from
the country,
from what would be considered. Talking about what impressed me in the city.
Mm-hmm. Okay, right.
The upward boundness of minority people that impressed me a lot. The football was the football. I was gonna try to work and make this team, provide for my family, and that was like, hey, you got to do that. I was more looking over there saying, wow, man. People can be successful here versus what I grew up with. You talked about me being country. I'm from Houston. It's a big city, but it does have a, you know, if you grew up in my town, you can see across over there, there's cows. Over here, there's an oil well pumping. And over here, there's a 100-story building right across the street. So Houston had a lot to offer, but for us in that era, it wasn't a lot for minority people in terms of being at the high level leadership level. And DC showed me that and impressed me.
That's awesome. Gotcha. Yeah. So again, like, you know, winning in that city like that, again, all the politicians, I'm sure, wanted to meet you guys and talk to you. So you got to talk to like some folks, presidents and stuff like that. So how were those, you know, I guess those, when you got to meet people like that, like how were
those experiences, those moments?
Yeah. So I was appointed. It wasn't a political role. President Bush, the second Bush of 44, I think he appointed me. I got the number wrong, but right. He appointed me as the chair of the President's Council on Service and Civic Participation, dealing with volunteerism and civic engagement. I led that with Cokie Roberts, the head of AOL, the head of AARP, the head of a lot of big CEOs, and I was the chair of that. I was humbled by that. I rode in the car with him. I got in the car and rode in that big car with him for the press conference. That was impressive to me. I was asked to come and watch the Super Bowl with President Obama. Me and my wife sat right behind him and his wife watching the Super Bowl one year. I played horseshoes with the first Bush, and Bill Clinton had me sitting on the front row of a conference to acknowledge the work that I do with youth, with the Youth Life Learning Center that I still have today. And I've been around a lot of people. I told you I sat back to back with Nelson Mandela. Wow. I've been around a lot of important people, but it isn't, you know, kind of giddy. It's always sobering to me and trying to see how I can parlay that to the next generation. Right. Not just the children in my household, but kids in the projects and inner city. That's what I've been known for. And you do know I played one team, and God told me, and this is something people don't know, I had a chance to go to Denver to make a lot of money when I was younger. And we had the deal, and God said, "Daryl, don't go." And so people don't even realize, they don't even know that story. Why nobody ever heard of me when I was on the picket line, when Reggie White went to Green Bay? I was a baller too on my way to the Hall of Fame. People never realized why didn't I go? Well, God told me not to go, and God provided for me. Didn't break my neck, played 20 seasons, and I'm cut at football. I actually quit. They wanted me to continue to play, but I tried to do it right. I tried to do things right. I tried to look at things in a bigger scope than just, "Ooh, I want to be a football player. I want to make money." Yeah, I like to make money, but there's so much more to life, particularly if it came from what I've come from. My mom didn't graduate high school. My dad graduated. My dad had a rough ride. And I was always sensitive to that, even though there were fights. And I never was mad at my daddy because I tried to stand in his shoes. And I tried to do that as an adult, where people come up to us all the time, and T.O., and if you guys, if you're like me, when I go out somewhere, I already can see who's coming. I can see.
From miles away.
And you got a decision to make. What kind of attitude are you going to have? I try to be ready already. If my wife and everybody's out, I might go, "You know what, guys? Let us finish dinner. If y'all still around, I got you." Or I might go, "Hey, come on. Oh, yes, yeah, come on. Come on, Mike. Come on. Get the picture." But that's my choice. That's my choice. And you can be mad if you want to. I remember going to training camp. She said, "Hey, Jared got to be at the hospital or got a teacher thing. I need you to be on the phone at 1. Well, when I come out of the locker room at 12:15, it's thousands of people in training camp. They just drove it from Pennsylvania and Ohio. Well, I can't get no mic and say, "Guys, my wife told me last night, y'all can hate if you want to, but I'm running right on through y'all and get to my call with my child." Yeah. So I've always learned, man, I'm not worrying about what y'all feel. I know my own heart. If I could stay, I would stay, but I can't stay. Right. And you know what? I'm going to tell you, or I may not tell you. You know what? I ain't missed not one lick of sleep. I treat you right, but I'm a human too. I'm human too.
Right.
And I'm not going to mistreat you. And so I've always been a thinker, trying to think through stuff.
Right.
You know.
And I'm the same way. As I began to realize, kind of like, as I kind of, you know, like I said, I wasn't I wasn't a top draft pick or anything like that. So I didn't have that instant stardom. I didn't really know how to navigate through any of that because I went to a small school. So I wasn't a big man on campus, things of that nature. So a lot of guys, they don't understand, like, you have to be somewhat groomed and kind of, you're educating yourself as to how to deal with different people. So what you're saying, you have to use your discretion, because I'm the same way. When I go out, even when I've gone out and I've had my nightlife and I've had to have security because of the things that I've been able to attain and the popularity and the fanfare started to grow. So I had to have someone with me that was kind of like my eyes with my eyes. And so you start to use your discretion. And again, you go out, you kind of, like you said, you see them before they even come. And so I think that's awesome that you're able to do that. And I know a lot of people with the way that you interact and whether the fan, they may like it or may not, they may like it or don't like it. And you may get a bad reputation, or they may say some bad things because of the way that you feel like you need to navigate that situation. They don't understand what it's like to be a professional. Yeah,
they don't understand the profession.
Right. They don't know what commitments we have. They don't understand what we have to do on an everyday basis when we walk out our doors, that we, in a sense, they feel like we're obligated. And it's almost like we have to be on 24/7 for them.
You can't be.
Right. And at the end of the day, like you said, we're human. We have emotion. We have feelings. We're just like them. We're doing something greater than what they're doing. But like you said, we can't lose sleep based on their feelings about how they feel like
you should handle something.
Right. We should have treated them.
Right. So, unless I truly mistreated you, I apologize, but I ain't mistreated you. But here's the thing about it. If you, T.O., you say, well, guys, we're going to go to the 49ers training camp in 6 weeks. So y'all already playing. It's a family trip. Mm-hmm. Well, you can text me and say, Daryl, I'm coming to – y'all live in Pennsylvania. You and your family said, we're going to go do a family trip. That ain't right. Had nothing to do with
– nothing at all. I got my own trip.
You and your family decided.
Right, yeah, we weren't in your plans. You were going to take a family vacation.
I went in your plans,
right? And if, and what you're saying, if you are to really indulge in them, that's truly a blessing. That's a blessing to them that you are able to have that time to engage with them. But again, obviously, fans, they don't feel that way. They don't see it that way. But I wanted to touch on something too that you mentioned, and I know. I know that you're a God-fearing man. I want these listeners, and everybody that's listening to understand, it's just not, we don't just wake up every day and go play sports, this and that and the other. We're human just like everybody else. Knowing, your story, your journey, as you said just moments ago, that God told you not to go play for a certain team. He told you to stay where you are. Can you just share a little bit of how God has played a big part in your life, not just football, but just Daryl pre-football, Daryl during football, and Daryl Green post-football. And then obviously, like you said, to be married 35 years, God has definitely has had his hand on your life and on your situation.
Yeah. Let me hit that. And we're going to go past now, but don't worry about my time.
Okay.
So, when I went to college, then I went back. There was a trainer invited me to a Bible. And in the meantime, I actually started listening to the Bible, reading the Bible. And the Bible tells us that the gospel, the Bible, the word, says there's the power in them for those who are away from God. And so just reading the Bible itself, there's a spirit that comes into you that transforms you. So guys, I was goody two shoes. My sister, you goody two shoes. And I was the nice kid. So I didn't see myself as needing any kind of help and save. But I started reading the Bible, and the Bible says ain't nobody good at two shoes, Daryl. Everybody is jacked up, and everybody has fallen short of God's glory. And I got on my knees, and I said, God, I didn't know. I'm sorry. I didn't know. And so right after I did that patch, the girl called me about a month later, said she was pregnant. I'm like, what? So I knew I wasn't marrying her. I respect her, but we were much. I was a much. Let me say this. I was a much. So I said, look, all I can say is we're not having no abortion. We're having our kid, and we'll figure that out from there. And thank God my daughter's married, 5 kids, doing great. And we raised her. So so I end up coming here, and my dream in life, when my mom picked me up from elementary school, I was 10, and I remember there was 7 kids. Maybe 3 were in the car. And I ran out there, hey, where y'all going? And somebody said, we're leaving, Dad. And I remember this thought came to my head. When the bat gets in my hands, when I'm a dad, when I'm a husband, I'm going to hit a home run. I'm not going to be like y'all. I love my parents. No, none of that. But I just said at 10 years old, I didn't know what I was saying or how I could make it happen. My Christianity, when I became a Christian, it crystallized that, oh, yeah. And so my entire life has been driven by being a godly man and a godly daddy and overcoming what daddy and grandpa did. That was my whole life. And so, my son never slept with a girl till he got married.
Yeah.
So you're talking about a grandpa that my dad never met. And then my daddy, alcoholic, divorced, parents divorced. Then me, child out of wedlock, all of the children had children out of wedlock. And my brother actually died. I think he was overdosed. I'm not sure. But so we came from a bad deal. But when I got saved, I wasn't in the NFL. I was just a little peon at an NAIA school. I wasn't a Daryl Green first round draft pick, had no clue. This is who I was. So when I got to this, I was already Daryl. I had foundations under me. Oh, I just have to play football. So if I was a truck driver again, it would have been this Daryl. So I already had got it. And so when I got into the league, the Bible says that the sons of God are led by his spirit. So I was always trying to follow God's direction. I was nervous to the NFL. I didn't know if it made sense to be in the NFL. I certainly was willing to hear God's voice when he spoke to me. Otherwise, and I'll just tell you this, it's a true story. When I got the opportunity to go to Denver for millions when nobody was really making that, mama, I'm broke. I can't pay your house note. I can't pay. I was broke. I had. So this is Paul Harvey, the rest of the story. Man, I really learned as a disciple. I met my pastor here before I met my wife in 1983. And I met my wife on Christmas Eve, my rookie year. And so I learned how to live. Oh, and by the way, I played pro football. Football was never the front. It was trying to live godly. And then God blessed, seek first the kingdom and his righteousness. And then all the stuff came with that.
With it.
But I was always driving to be a God. Man, come on, man. I'm never cheated on my wife. And I came as a homemonger. My family was that, what we were, my daddy, all that we were. And here I am, a black man, and my black son never slept with a girl till he got married. Come on, man.
Amen, brother.
You breaking cycles.
With my draft pick spot.
Yes.
Your draft pick spot give you more opportunities. Your bank account give you more opportunities. So
more temptation, more opportunities.
More opportunities to live like hell.
Right.
And so I fortunately, when I got right with Jesus in college, the foundations were set because I was going to live that way if I was driving a truck or chopping down trees or pro football. And so God allowed me to do it for all these years. And I'm still walking it out. Like I said, I'm going to die like this. They can take the football and my job from me, but they can't take that. And so my family and my generations are redeemed. My children, my grandkids, 12 grandkids, 4 children, and 4, kids that married into us. Man, I'm on cloud now.
Awesome, man.
Football is great, the Super Bowl, that stuff, I'm telling you humbly, that stuff is in the concept of how I've tried to live my life and what's important and valuable. And that's you know me. That's me, Patch. You know what's up. I worked hard. Trying to be the best at football, but I wasn't holding my balls and beating my chest and all that stuff. I was just competing. And you called the ball on me, hey man, you had the work to get it. And I can't be hating on you because you balled out. Because I think you had to ball out to do it against me. So the way I saw it,
I would have.
If you would have caught the ball, you would have spent it. If you would have caught a ball on me, you would have spent the ball, right?
Uh, I would have called. Yeah, I probably would have.
Yeah, that's the thing. You say you heard what he said. Hey, I know.
He always let that get away. I didn't catch a ball on Darryl Green, but I tell you what, if I would have.
T.O., how many balls did you catch on me? Did you? I don't remember us. You probably called a couple on me. What
early on in my career. I remember, like I said, because I remember being young.
The Frisco?
You're right, yeah. In Frisco. Yeah, so I remember being young, and that's the thing. It's like what we did, especially as a youngster, a young developing receiver, most of our routes, like I said, I was like either second, third, you know, in the progression or whatever, maybe third or fourth. I ain't going to say second or third. I'm going to go third or fourth in the progression. So most of my routes, if anything, we had to protect Jerry. So like I said, if I was on the outside, the far side of the format, outside of the formation, and Jerry had a route coming to me or whatever, I was so consumed on really protecting Jerry and not running the wrong route.
Right.
That was my focus. Because
you weren't running to get open. You was running for the concept so Jerry would be open.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. What I do as like my second or third year, I think I made maybe a couple of catches here and there. But like I said, it wasn't anything of significance. But I do recall, like I said, when you go through the team meetings, things of that nature, and we're looking at defensive, you know, the secondary, this and that and the other, obviously you were one of those guys that obviously, like I said, we had to account for. Yeah. So early on in my career, I can't say how many I caught, probably not many.
Trust me, I don't trip, man. I don't think you can be successful without some level of respect for your opponent.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, that's the way I look at it. I wouldn't have talked or anyway, but I respect people's talent because I know what it takes to get there. And in my opinion, it was like, dude, if you catching balls on me, why am I mad? I'm saying you a baller. I'm not giving you credit. I can't be screaming. I'm like, dang, that sucker, man.
And the thing is, it's competition. People feel
it's
like
competition.
Athletes these days, they feel like if you're running 10 routes, if you have 10 routes on somebody and a DB is defending 10 routes, you're not going to be 10 out of 10. You just have to be realistic. There's going to be something that factors in there to where you're not going to be 100%. It's either going to be the ball placement. It's going to be either you slip. It's going to be something.
Rush.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So for me, it's just like what I just said, it's the competitiveness. It's the competition. And like you said, it's the respect for each other. And I think that's honestly how I started to get better because I realized that I wasn't as good as a lot of the defenders and people that I played against. So that was me giving them that respect. And I knew, I'm like, okay, I got to work extra hard. I have to work harder just to be able to stack up against my opponents. And I think that's what a lot of people did with you.
Listening to you, it's kind of crazy. It's almost like we almost ought to have a study. We think our brains are so much the same.
Right.
What was the factors? Was it our family structure? Was it our mindset? It's something that we are so, it's connected. Weird. Yeah. You're talking like, damn, I'm talking to myself. Yeah.
I think for me, it was a mindset. And I try to tell kids and I tell people, I was a realist. You have to be honest with yourself. There's
get here? How did what was it?
It's okay to have confidence, but you sometimes, like I said, you can't be overconfident and you can't underestimate your opponent at the same time. And so for me, that's what I did. I didn't underestimate, you know, the opposition.
Respect everybody.
Right, exactly. And I knew, but at the same time, you have to be a realist, bro. Like, that's how I was. I knew that I wasn't as good as my peers around me.
But let me ask you a question. Did you have, I mean, you know, they called me little. Yeah, you can't play. They didn't pick me, won't pick me. Did you go through that as a child?
Right. What I went through with what you're kind of trying to describe is I went through that in high school where I felt like I probably should have been playing or I wanted to play. But the coach's evaluation of my skill set and my talent at that time.
They were wrong.
You know what I mean? They just, again, for whatever reason, they didn't put me, you know, in the starting rotation or in rotation.
I'm talking about the kids, though. Even the kids were wrong. Y'all said, okay, they pick, okay, T.O., you picking and I'm picking. You just look right over. You just look over there.
Right, exactly.
Hey, man, okay, it's two guys left. Okay, take Daryl. Well, dude, I should have been picked first.
They picked Duck last.
But the reality is, what I think T.O. is saying is that the lie wasn't us.
They were wrong.
But we weren't the kind of people who were mad and cussing at them. We just went and kicked their butts.
Right.
Man, I'm telling you, man, we might need to get somebody to think about some kind of, I don't know, it's something that you got me thinking. Because I've never talked to anybody that the synergies are so, I'm like, dang, he sound like me. There has to be a reason.
And it's so crazy because me and Hatch, we've gone back and forth, and he's gotten mad at me. He goes, T, you can't keep saying that, man, that you didn't do this. I said, Hatch, that's just how I was. Yeah.
Because it's the perspective of what when T says it a certain way, you have younger generations especially saying, well, he sounds like he just got lucky and went to the Hall of Fame, which we know nobody gets lucky and goes to the Hall of Fame.
I think, Hatch, we're digging that up, what I just said.
And I agree. There's something else there. It has more to do with just somebody's talent, in my point of view, right? It has more to do with your will to win as well. There's going to be the stars have to line up a certain way. You got to have some type of luck. You have to have some type of skill. You have to have all of these things. What you guys are saying is you guys didn't want to go to the Hall of Fame, but you still went to the Hall of Fame and you'll just take it. No.
But I want to add one last thing. I think that from day one, T.O., you were a baller. When that coach said that, you were a baller. Yeah. I think that we were from day one.
Right.
We, okay, I'm too little. Are you this? That? Y'all can say what y'all want to with y'all eyes, but no.
We were really wrong.
We may not have knew it, and they sure didn't know it.
Right.
No. I think we knew it. It's something in us.
Let me ask, we couldn't articulate it
because they wouldn't let us talk. We couldn't say it. But it's something about it that, man, I think I'm listening to him talk. We really knew we were ballers.
Yes. Right, yeah. Okay,
and
let me ask both of you guys this then, right? Because again, I agree with what you're saying. All I'm saying is, what about the individuals who it does not come to fruition where they end up in the Hall of Fame, but are thinking just like you? If they don't end up in the Hall of Fame, then were they still right, or are they now considered wrong because they weren't ended up as a successful Hall of Famer?
Well, whoa. The Hall of Fame ain't the
same.
Well,
that's an example.
You're successful. Yeah, I'm just using it as an example. That's almost not fair to a kid. You know, the Hall of Fame. I play with a lot of guys that are not Hall of Famers that do.
I'm just using the word Hall of Fame as successful.
I don't know, Hatch. What do you think, T?
I think for me, what I've listened and heard you say, with really kind of your start in the football, which is like your 11th grade year. For me, I think we were late bloomers in a sense. And you got to think too, you know, I mentioned God. God knows he knows what we're going to be before what we know. Before we came out the womb, he knew what we were going to be. And at that point in time, we just hadn't really grasped that concept of where we were going. And I think when you talk about the competitiveness of us being, and probably our upbringing, I think, like I said, everybody has their path and their journey to have gotten where they are. And I always speak about my three D's, Daryl. That's desire, dedication, and discipline.
And I think with you, you started, you realized you played football and you had a desire, no matter what, you could have been playing, like you said, you tried out for baseball. You had a desire to play baseball. You, if you would have ran off a track, if that was your desire, you probably could have made that. But for whatever reason, you found your desire, your passion for football, and your dedication and your discipline is what enabled you to get to where you are, which is a Hall of Fame. I mean, that's the same, the same for me. So for me, I had the desire to be whatever it was. It just happened to be football, just like you.
Yeah.
But when you talk about dedication and discipline, that's what enabled me to really get beyond where I think my mindset early on at that early age, where well beyond where I thought I could be. But when you think about dedicating yourself and applying that discipline, for me, it was just the consistency. I wanted to execute the consistency of becoming not just going from average to good, but to great. Eventually I became great, but there was something in that average to good phase where I felt like, okay, I need to do X, Y, Z to get on par with the athletes that were around me. You know what I mean? I had to get on par with it because I realized that I wasn't good. I had to, like I said, I was skinny. I was scrawny. I heard you talking about 173 pounds. When I left high school, I was like 180, 185 pounds, if that. And I was like, what, maybe 6'1". So you got to think, I was like a string bean. Yeah. So, but I had to continue to work. Even on the heels of going to college, they only recruited me because they were at high school recruiting someone else. They were watching film on him and they saw me make a few plays here and there. But I had a strong dissatisfaction from being on the sidelines for 4 years, playing JV in high school and not being able to play. And then even in college, my freshman year, I really didn't play a whole lot. I had a strong dissatisfaction for being mediocre. And I was that way because I was assessed and I was evaluated as such. Because when you have coaches that basically they're gonna put you first team, second team, third team, or what have you. I thought I could have been or should have been, if not second team or in the starting rotation. But that was something that drove me. That was my motivation to not sit on that sideline going to college for another 4 years where I'm sitting there watching everybody else make plays, you know, crowds cheering, this and that and the other. I did that for 4 years in high school. Two-a-days, you know how two-a-days were before how they are, before they implementing the practice habits now. Dude, I went through two-a-days. It was hot, 90 degrees, people throwing up, this and that and the other. You do all of that leading up to the season, high school. You think about high school football in the South. Then you get ready for the season. I remember this vividly, Daryl. Hatch. Riding on that bus, you see the lights in the horizon. You driving to the stadium. As closer you get to the stadium, you start smelling that popcorn, the hamburgers, the Coca-Cola,
the energy.
Then you go in the locker room. You get dressed. You go through pregame. You feeling good. And then guess what? You
sit your butt on the sideline.
You watching the whole entire game. Bro, I remember that vividly. That's what drove me. That was my motivation. I didn't want to continue to sit there and work and work and work and not be able to be a part of something that we all work hard for. So that was kind of like my motivation for, like I said, going to college, the things that I learned, you know, just by sitting back and watching. I may not have played or whatever. I practice a lot, but I listened to my other coaches coach the guys that were in front of me. So I was very attentive. I was real retentive as far as information that I was absorbing. And I had that carry me from high school to college and even from the college to the pros.
Man, I tell you, that's funny you saying that. Goodness. So fortunately for me, I started on JV. I started my senior year. I was off the bench as a freshman. And I started the rest of 3 years. And I started like 18, 19 years in a row in the NFL. So I never really had that part of it, except I got cut from baseball. But other than that, mm-hmm. I said at my Hall of Fame speech that the thing was the opportunity. Somebody finally said, I'm going to give you the opportunity.
I believe in you.
And right. If somebody will give you the opportunity out of some foolishness, ignorance, bias, don't know what they're doing, that's the most demoralizing to me T, that was the most, what about the guy, I mean, probably rest his soul, that they said cut Michael Jordan, you know, or the guy, maybe the guy that cut me off baseball. Now, sure enough, I was out there late and I only tried to catch the ball. I didn't run, I didn't bat. But what I'm saying,
yeah, you got people,
the coach that started me on JV and started me on varsity and started me, I came back from college, I put me in front of everybody to back up the two senior cornerbacks as a freshman. And the guy that picked me first round, Bobby Bethard, Hall of Famer GM. And then the guys that, you know, put me out there, even at age 40 years old, you know, starting. So, no, I think you're exactly right. The foolishness is when some of these guys who got jobs that they don't deserve or don't need are irresponsible in these jobs that hurt a lot of guys and mistreat guys. Yeah. But I'm saying what I'm applauding for T.O. is that, man, you kept balance. You kept yourself, you know, they try to say all this stuff about you. They don't know Paul Harvey, the rest of the story. The crap that you dealt with and you stayed, man, I can't, when I was listening to you talk, I'm like, what? They your people, I got treated better. But now, that said, well, I don't know, you were on the same, well, y'all weren't in AIA, were y'all?
No. We were Southern Conference.
They were small
Division
D1.
One?
Yeah, small
Division
D1.
Division 1 AA.
Yeah, well, see, you should have came play with the little kids. Should have played with the little kids.
But I think overall, I think what you're asking me and what I wanted and how I want to articulate it is that I think when you talk about what is it about us, and I think I can put you into this equation or this statement, that for me is what set me apart from everyone was really, it was my dedication and my discipline. And then it was the execution of being consistent. It was the execution of being consistent. So like I said, what set me apart from everybody, like I said, it was my desire, but I had to dedicate myself. And then I had to discipline myself to do what others wouldn't do.
The first thing, everything is right, but there's one first thing. You believed in yourself, regardless of the noise.
Number one.
It was something that they couldn't break. They could not break you. I don't care what y'all say. You know, oh, you too little. You this. You can't. Coach, you can say what you want to say. I'm walking away here knowing I'm better than Mike. I'm knowing I can play. I respect you. Thank you very much. But I ain't walking here and accepting what you said. That's what the thing that kept you driven, because. Because if you don't believe in yourself, if you finally just give up, man, all that stuff you just said don't even come to play.
It goes down the drain. But yeah, I mean,
you believe something.
As a kid, you're gonna be a dreamer, and when you dream, you're gonna be a dreamer. You visualize yourself. You have to visualize yourself out there making plays.
Don't let them put that light out.
So funny. I just pulled up some of my notes because, like I said, sometimes like I do speeches and speaking engagement, things of that nature. And this is I have a little topic here. It says the reason that I made it out of Alexander City. That's where I'm from. And these are some of the notes that I had for myself. And it goes, and I put it, I'm different. I wanted to be better than I was. I wasn't the fastest. I wasn't the biggest. I wasn't the strongest, but what set me apart from everyone was my dedication and discipline. And then it's that execution of being consistent. Because if you think about playing the number of years that you played in the league, Daryl, the number of years you played in the league, Hatch, you have to be consistent in order to make it year after year. Because soon as they see any type of decline or any fall off in your skill set, they're going to be looking for someone to replace you. So I knew that early on, especially when they start saying, okay, my rookie year, like when I saw what really hit it for me, my rookie year and my second year, going into my second year, some of these guys that were drafted first and second round, Daryl, heck, they were getting cut. So I'm
it's time.
I got drafted well after them. So I
better
know that I'm on the same chopping block that they could be on.
What was your rookie year?
My 96.
Top picks were still getting cut back then?
Dude, we had a deep.
My second round pick got cut. The guy that got picked in the second round got cut.
Right. We had a defensive end, Nigerian guy. I think it was Israel Ifeanyi or something like that. First and second round, the first year, he ended up getting cut. And I was like, man. And then, like I said, I was competing with some other receivers that were, you know, like I said, that got drafted or what have you. And then I started to compare myself with some of these guys that had gone to some of these major, these bigger schools. And then I'm looking at them run their routes and I'm like, yo, they're not really that much better than me. They just went to a bigger program.
Yep.
I'm just like, yo, and really the light bulb hit me was when I went to the Senior Bowl and I saw Amani Toomer, who played at Michigan, Bobby Engram, and all he played
Penn
at
State.
Penn State, Mercury Hayes, who played at I think he played at Michigan.
Notre Dame.
So I'm like, man, I'm looking at them run routes, and I'm like, wow, I thought they were just that much more. I'm not more.
Nope.
I thought they were that much better and faster than I was.
Nope.
But I was like, yo, they're the same as I am. They just went to bigger establishments. So that was kind of what turned the light bulb on for me and allowed me to turn the corner to make me realize, man, I can play this game and I can play it just as good as they can and I can play at the next level.
Wow, man, I tell you, this is so good, man. I hope everybody's listening because this is a lot for a lot of people, whether you're an adult or a child, to be able to have this kind of conversation. I want to come back on with you guys at some point.
Absolutely, man.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And then for a lot of kids out there, you know, every day, you know, we have something that inspires us, motivate us. You know, like I said, had played 8 years, I played 15, you played 20. Every day is not going to feel the same. That's going to be something that's going to motivate you. As your job description, you have to obviously prepare yourself and do the necessary things to allow yourself to be ready for the season. But there are sometimes, like I said, when that motivation no longer does it for you, then that's when the discipline and everything else comes
that's
into play.
That's the fault, yeah.
Yep. Else has to replace that motivation because it's not going to be the same every day. You're not going to feel good every day, every week, every year.
But you still got to go do it.
Right. Every year is going to present some challenges. And you have to learn yourself how to really respond, how to deviate, and how to get yourself back on track. We're human.
Absolutely.
First of all, every year, they're bringing a player in to try to take your place.
Yeah. Sometimes two or three.
Every year. Yeah, every year. When we sign you, we're trying to replace you.
Absolutely.
And not always, right.
Yeah.
Right. And not always are they looking for someone to replace you. That's just the law of averages.
The opportunity for this guy to beat you is there.
Yes. Right, exactly. They're basically every organization, every owner, GM, whatever. As every team goes into the new season, they always are trying to improve upon the team in order to obviously hold that trophy up at the end of the year.
Automatically.
Exactly. So they're bringing in talent every year, and it just so happened, hey, they may bring in somebody that plays your position that can be very well push you, you know, to either push you to play better or replace you.
One of the two.
Right.
Yeah, we are here with Darryl Green, two-time Super Bowl champ of the Washington Redskins, played 20 years in the NFL. I know they say you've been doing a lot of stuff after, you know, post-career. I know you got some things going on right now regarding COVID and all that stuff. So what's up? Yeah. Give us some insight.
Yeah,
on that.
We don't want – know we your time is precious. We've obviously been here a little bit longer than probably expected.
I love this, man. I'm loving just – kicking it with you guys, man, and this is just a kick it moment that I think is rich information in it. You know, I'm an associate athletic director at a school called George Mason University, so I do that.
And how long you been doing that?
I've been doing that about 5 years.
Okay.
I have a youth program around the country, a company called Centene. They sponsor that in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It's called Strong Youth, Strong Communities. We've done suicide outreaches, everything related to 13 to 18 year old kids, everything beyond no sports at all. But in recent times, I've been working in the COVID times company called Holodyne, H-A-L-O-D-I-N-E, holodyne.com. And the way the virus, everybody should understand this, that's why they're telling you to cover your mouth and your nose, because mm-hmm. the virus is a spore, maybe a microscopic size spore that goes into your nostrils. You they call them the nasal pharynx or your oral pharynx. And mm-hmm. when it gets in there, it would be like planting a seed. You plant the seed and then it's under that dirt. Mm-hmm. And over time, it's going to germinate. So that spore will get in your nostrils and in your nasal pharynx or oral pharynx. And it's like that seed is going to sit there anywhere from 3 hours to 3 days before, boom, you got a plant, you got a virus.
Right, right.
This product, in the same fashion that if you touch the doorknob and it has the spore on it, you will sanitize your hands.
Okay.
This thing goes, we put it in our nostrils and let it go down our nostrils and it sanitizes. And in 15 seconds, same thing as a hand sanitizer, to kill it in 15 seconds. And then we can take some of that, or we even sell a gargle, you gargle. So you've just basically, and the good thing about the hand sanitizer may last 30 seconds. I really don't know, 30 seconds or 15 seconds or 30 or a minute. This stuff worked 4 hours. So my wife just got back. She texted me. She just got back. She went to get her hair done. She sanitized her nostrils and her orals. And she'll probably do it again, probably doing it now up there. Because it lasts 4 hours.
4 hours. Okay.
It kills it before it gets it bursts.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's FDA registered. It's patented. Doctors and professors produced it, and I actually sell it. The Washington football team has it. Clemson has it. And mm-hmm. to make it clear, Clemson's quarterback that caught the virus did not use it that day. So I validated. Mm. Penn State is using it. And so it's holodyne.com, H-A-L-O-D-I-N-E.
Show us the box again.
Yeah, so obviously we do a YouTube version of this too, where we have video. But for all you guys that are listening, and for all the YouTube subscribers, I'm putting it up on the screen right now. And as you see, like you said, it's H-A-L-O.
That's a nasal swab.
That's the nasal swab.
What you call a nasal swab. It pops off and then it's like you dip it in there. And now, when you dip it in, you sniff it back. Mm-hmm. Go to holodyne.com. Now, I don't use the swab. I use the one that you. I want to feel it going down. Hey man, I want to feel it.
Take care of much as all that.
But the swab. Man. The swab works, but you know, you just push it in your nostrils and sniff in. Push it in your nostrils, sniff in, and it works. But I don't know, Tito. You have the other one, Sue. You have the other one.
These are the ones that you sent me. These are the single use of swab sticks. So this is what they sent me.
Just the swabs.
Yeah, these are the swab sticks.
All right, I'm getting you the other ones. I wanted them to send you both.
Both of these are the same.
You just go let me die though. Okay, that's cool. Just go let me die, huh, Darryl? That's all right. You know what I'm saying?
I got you.
Hey, T, I'm going to send you 100 boxes. Hack, you be all right.
Yeah, you be all right. Hey, you don't go nowhere anyway, so
yeah, you ain't going nowhere. Yeah.
Right.
He was just in the state of Virginia. He was just up my way.
So was.
He flew his little jet over here.
Ooh, oh, I wish man, I did.
That's what's, not,
I
oh, wish that's I what's did. Going on.
It's to get your popcorn jet.
Boy, I tell you, I need to get on popcorn that.
Jet. Yeah, get your popcorn jet.
Hey, man, are y'all sponsored by Jiffy Popcorn? Jiffy?
No.
Where y'all at, Jiffy?
Where you at, Jiffy?
Hey, we taking it. Hey, Orville Redenbacher.
Jared's in Chicago.
Somebody needs to come on with this.
Hey, you know, I'm down.
We should be eating popcorn while we doing it.
We're working on that.
Come on, Jiffy, Arvo, Jiffy.
All that.
I will tell you, what a blessing, man.
We appreciate you coming on, Darryl, man.
Yeah, we appreciate you, man, for sure. And obviously we've talked before.
I didn't know you was my brother though, man. I know we were boys, but I didn't know you was my literal brother, man.
Man, but that's the thing. But that's what I was about to get to, because I didn't go to my Hall of Fame induction, and for obvious reason. And like I said, I know through some of the other Hall of Famers that went there, and people were split, split down the room as far as you know what they thought about me and this, that, and the other. But at the end of the day, man, this is what a lot of people have never really realize about me, man, is I'm a good person, despite how the media has portrayed me. But I thought, like I said, obviously you went through the process, but I know with me and how I was kind of, I was assessed, you know, as I was being nominated and things were thrown out there. And I felt, again, I felt disrespected considering where I stood statistically amongst the receivers. And then just the class of people that I was nominated with the first 2 years, I felt like I should have been in there the first year, second year, and then it took 3 years. So
let me say this. There's two things you just said. You said people's opinion about your showing up and participating and where you went in at. Those are two different things. Let's keep those separate.
Right.
You should have been, take this to the bank, you should have been a first ballot Hall of Famer, period. The players can say what they want to say about you coming to the enshrinement. I'm going to say there's no ignorant player that would say you shouldn't have been a first ballot. Those are two different things.
Right.
And I hope there's no players that was that ignorant. You're first ballot. You're first ballot, not, hands down. You're not coming. People can have an opinion about that.
Right.
And should have the right to. The part of should he have been there 3 years earlier, that shouldn't be debatable. They know they were wrong. They know it. And truth be told, I've communicated with some of the voters. And when they get into their own personal biases and personality thing, they're wrong in their job.
Exactly, because that's not
that's not the job description. Yeah. So, yes, players can say, man, we want you here with us. You don't come, I'm mad. Should he be first pick? That, none of that debatable.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, you got to give people the grace, the right to agree with the fact that you didn't agree with coming that day because you were offended by that. That's different. But in terms of anybody saying you're not a first ballot, that is not justifiable. It's not by play, it's not by numbers, it's not by anything. And that I will stand by, and I've always stood by you on that.
I appreciate you being there.
I can feel that. And people can have an opinion. Should you have been there 3 years earlier?
I appreciate you saying that, you know, just for the audience's sake. You know, like I said, sometimes, like I said, you can speak and then obviously you can not articulate it the right way. So obviously, like I said, I appreciate you clearing that and clarifying that. That's kind of like where I was. And I know, like I said, you know, you sent out a text. We've talked since then. It's always that, you know, that feeling. Like I said, I know that I'm part of an elite class. And then, you know, like I said, I don't really get wrapped into what people think about me because at the end of the day, like I said, I'm in there now. But you know, I at some point I'm human. I did feel a certain way when I felt like there were certain number of Hall of Famers or whatever that felt.
It was justified. What you felt was justified. Right. I don't care what nobody say. Mm-hmm. Now, when you decided, man, I'm just too teed off, I ain't coming. People can have an opinion on that.
Right.
But the first thing is first. The first thing is first. That man is a first. Come on, Hatch. Let me see the guy who stood up and said no.
Exactly.
You got the floor, dog. You got the floor.
I would like to hear that.
Right. Let's go get the recording. What he said.
Who
was he and what did he say? We didn't ask you how you liked him.
You're not here
to vote on how you like people.
That's another job.
Me and Hatch, we go back and forth. He gives me a lot of flack about the fact that, like I said, you know, not being on the top 100, you know, influential players that ever played the game. So for me, like I said, top two or three in my category of all time, and then you not make the top 100 that have made an impact on the game. For me, that just added insult to injury. You know what I mean?
So, but it's probably those same people in that same room.
No doubt. Joe Horrigan was the
He was the culprit. He was the top guy.
Hey, Joe Horgan, we would love to get you on the show, buddy, so we can hear your real opinion.
Come on this show.
Exactly.
You know what I would love,
but we would love to get you on the show and have a real discussion.
Hold on. Here's a question. T.O., do you have the ability to have an intelligent conversation with Joe Horgan and hear him and let it work? If he feels that he's going to be disrespected, just look like
we want to hear him. We would like to rebuttal when he says negative or false information.
First of all, I know Joe. I would love to see Joe on this show. He has a show himself.
I honestly want to know what went into and whatever his reasons for not, number one, them not putting me number first ballot or second ballot. And then the fact that, again, like I said, you talk about some of the top players that have made an impact on the game. When you talk about me, Jerry, and Randy, we're the top three. And then you have other guys that are before me and you exclude me from that list. I need to know why. I need you to give me some information that supports why I'm, of all people, I was two, three, or four. Behind statistically, behind the greatest of all time, and including Randy, and Randy made it, and I didn't. So I need some information. Hey, again, it's not going to soothe.
Here's how the conversation should go.
Right.
I jacked it up.
Yeah. Again, it's just got to be a person. Period.
Right. I was wrong.
Right.
And you know what? I did something that. Now hold on. Let me back up real quick. I don't know. You can't put one man on this. Joe, I don't know why you're saying Joe, because I don't know the story, but I don't believe that it's one guy that pitched this thing. And I've talked to other guys that I know was irresponsible in this process that voted. But I don't know that you can just put this on Joe.
I'm not told it, but I think he spearheaded some of.
I mean, he'd have to answer that, but he may have spearheaded. It's like trying to get votes in the House or the Senate.
Right.
Let me go and meet with him to get him to vote with me. If he spearheaded, he needs to come on and say that. But I'm not going to say that, you know, it was Joe, because people had to make their own vote.
No, I get that. And if that is the case, then you would think that, okay, if Joe didn't solely have an impact on the decisions, then you would think the other people that knew, just like you know, then they should have overridden. Like Joe, like, nah, Joe, I get where you're coming from. You may have, you know, you may feel this way about him, but look, this is look at his stats. Yeah. Look at this, look at that. You know what I mean? Look at his body of work. Those are the people, like I said, that probably should have stepped in and be like, okay, look now, this is not right.
Like what you saw, and don't judge the heart, but just judge what happened. Roger Goodell said, man, my bad. I blew it. On Colin, would you receive that, or would you start judging it? Would you hear it? Could you hear it?
No. I would give him the opportunity to hear him out, and like I said, give me something that supports whatever he was thinking.
Yeah, if this is true, I think Joe was wrong, I'm really interested in digging into this and getting him on this show.
Oh, because the thing is, Daryl, let me just say this. Before, as I was making my decision, and when I came to my decision not to go to the Hall of Fame, I talked directly, not to Joe, but I talked directly to Dave Baker. And he knew everything that was going on. And before I made any other decisions, we spoke. We got on a group call. I had my mark, my branding, my PR people, what have you. We made sure that whoever made a move, and if it was going to be made, that we called and we discussed it. The fact that they basically then decided that, okay, well, I guess the night before the actual ceremony, it was that Joe came out, and I think he didn't even speak to David Baker. And prior to then, they were having these discussions, they were running things by him. But he made a statement, I guess, to a writer or what have you, and basically just said, you know, he took it upon himself to say, okay, we're not acknowledging him at all during the ceremony. And that was something, again, we were supposed to be, I guess, made privy of.
Because Joe went off on a tangent and said what he had to say, that reporter reported that, and it was never discussed. So that's why I bring Joe in the picture.
Joe, because, that's a good point.
You know what I mean? Good so point. That's why good I point. Said that, because he good was like, point. Okay, we're not even yeah. acknowledging him.
I spoke to David Baker, I think it was at the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Was that the Minnesota Super Bowl?
Yeah,
it was Minnesota. I think it was. Yep. I think I was in the lobby. I'm trying to see myself where I was. He came to me. He said, Daryl, I'll probably be tapping into you to try to get you in on communicating with T.O. in a positive way. This is what he said to me. I'm just telling you what I remember. Right. It was just in passing. I may like to get you involved with T.O. on this. And they never called me back. But I do remember David Baker right. mentioning you to me. And it never went anywhere from there. I don't know about the rest right. of the stuff. But I'll forget all that. I would love to get on this show right here. Get your popcorn ready.
Ready.
I'd like to get your popcorn ready and get
Joe
Harrigan on here, because Joe is a radio guy, TV guy. And I like Joe. I don't have no reason not to like him. But I'd love to have him come on here and defend what he's saying. I would only ask that we do it in the way we've done with one another.
Absolutely. Right, yeah, in an open fashion or what have you. Like,
bro, I'm gonna work on that, man. Get your popcorn ready.
There it is, right. There it is. All we right, appreciate man. You we having him, DG, man. Thank you, brother.
Y'all my man. Love you guys. I appreciate it. Let's do it. I'm gonna get back to y'all. I'm gonna get back to you
for
guys.
Sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
Thanks all right. again, man. Thanks all right, for coming
team.
On.
All right, stay safe out okay. there, man.
All
right, my guy. Peace. Man.
Take care.
There it is, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Daryl Green, for coming on the show, man. Appreciate it. I said that's a good dude right there. Been my mentor for about the last 10, 15 years or so. And again, I just can't say enough good things about the man he is. And as you see, it's not right. about him being the football player, the ex-football player. It's, you know, again, just the type of man and leader he is in the community.
No doubt. That's definitely a man of character, God-fearing man. And I'm glad we got a chance to touch base on that a little bit. And so we're always trying to bring on some very interesting and dynamic and motivating, inspirational guests. And so obviously having him on, and just to kind of just really expand on just who he is as a person. And as you mentioned, as a man. But yeah, I mean, it was just a delight just to hear him talk about really kind of his journey, his path to where he is right now. And then some of the things that he's involved with, and just some of the people that he's been associated with as well. So it was definitely a delight, definitely a surprise to me to hear about some of the people, some like really notable, prominent names. I think once you hear the podcast, you will be able to realize that, you know, Daryl Green, again, football has obviously afforded him the opportunity to meet a lot of great people. And just as myself and you, Hatch, I'm sure, you know, it's obviously given you the opportunities to meet a number of people. But when you think about, you know, people like George Bush and Nelson Mandela, these are some prominent figures in our history that this guy has, you know, basically, you know, shared the same air with.
Yeah. I said he was rubbing shoulders, if you will, you know, at all these events out there in Washington, D.C. So, again, that brings us to our free and out segment. Again, we take three things that we thought that was beneficial to the conversation and share them and kind of recap with them. And I think that's one of the things was, again, him sitting with four presidents and also sitting back to back with Nelson Mandela at an event. I think that's a very important piece of this whole conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And then for a lot of people that don't know, especially if you're a football, I guess, a football buff, a football fanatic, then I guess you would know who would be considered the NFL, I guess, the fastest guy in history is. If you're a youngster, if you're a young buck, you know, kind of wet behind the ears, then you probably won't know this. You're probably going to say Deion Sanders. But yeah, this guy, he basically said it on the show himself. He said he's been clocked as fast as 4-1-1.
4-1-1. And he said he probably wasn't running his fastest and running a 4-1-1.
Right. So, and people that are listening, ooh, I am not stuttering. You did not hear me wrong. I'm not singing the Mary J. song, what's the 4-1-1? I'm saying this dude ran a 40
a 40-yard dash.
Yes.
In 4.11 seconds.
Yes, with some with some speed to burn still.
Right. So that,
again, we all see, right, Tyreek Hill now and Marquise Goodwin, right? Those are 4-3 guys, maybe 4.28.
John Ross
was a 4.2 guy.
4.22. So, man, you think about, you know, you talk about speed. Oh,
lightning.
My.
Enlightening. Man. But again, if you guys are not believers of this, there's a bunch of clips on YouTube where I know Eric Dickerson was a 4.3 coming out, and he had about a 10-yard head start on Darryl Green, and Darryl Green went and got him.
Him. I got to go see that.
Yeah. That's one of the clips. That's when everybody was like, yeah, Darryl Green's for sure one of the fastest ever. He's chased down some Olympians, if you will, on the gridiron as well. So that would be definitely our second our second part of the three and out. I think the last one for our three and out is how he, back in the day, you know, when Reggie White was a free agent, he was also about to be a free agent as well. He could have went to Denver, and he said he passed up millions of dollars to stay in Washington and finish his career out in Washington.
So that's Darryl Green going to Denver, not
– Yes, yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah, because Reggie went to the Green Bay Packers, right, left the Philadelphia Eagles on big-time free agent and went to the Green Bay Packers. But around that same time, when free agency was just getting big, Darryl had a chance to leave the Washington Redskins, and he would have been the highest paid corner in the NFL probably by far at that time, but he chose to stay because his belief that the Lord told him to stay, you know, to stay in Washington and finish his career.
Wow. Yeah. And I think what's so remarkable about this is that, you know, there's only a few athletes in their prospective sports that have stayed their entire career, played that entire career with the same team. You think of Kobe, you think of Tim Duncan, I'm not sure if there's anybody.
Dan Marino.
Dan Marino. Right? But nobody really thinks about, or I guess Darryl Green's name doesn't really come up. But I think that's more impressive than these other guys that I've mentioned, not to discount or discredit what they've done. But you think as a defensive guy, doing all the hitting, the wear and tear on your body.
And being a smaller body frame.
Right, exactly. This guy right here, again, I think there's a lot to be said and a testament really to how he lived his life, how he took care of his body. And just again, he basically said in the show that he worked on his feet, his quickness. Those are some of the things that he worked on pretty much on an everyday basis. And we both know when you want to play anything, you know, for a long period of time, we talk about longevity. There's a lot of things that factor into doing that. It's just not just waking up and just, you know, getting lucky and just hoping that you play a number of years that you set out to. I mean, injuries are a part of the game in every sport. And so you have to be able to manage all these things that you encounter to obviously prolong your career. And he was able to do that.
Absolutely. And again, like working on them feet and every single day at his speed. But he did forget to work on them hands, though, because he showed and say he can't catch nothing.
I don't even know. He gave us a shout out to this these nasal swabs to help you prevent you from catching COVID. I mean, he can't catch nothing anyway, so he's good. He's good.
You ain't got nothing to worry about, DG. You know what I'm saying? Now, we appreciate you having on Darryl Green today, NFL Hall of Famer from the Washington Football Club. Again, just appreciate you coming on, sharing the knowledge and showing up some love, man. So, again, don't forget to subscribe. Tune in on the Himalaya app. Get your Popcorn Ready podcast.
Yep, and definitely tune in on our YouTube channel. Go to youtube.com/Terrell Owens to see the video version of this.
There it is. Till next week.
Peace.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Mail checks, invoices, documents, and everything you need to keep your business running. Get rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS. And with the mobile app, you can take care of mailing on the go. Make the same no-brainer decisions as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.